And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's January 19th, 19th day of the year. 346 days remain until this year's in our rearview mirror. On this day in 379, Emperor Gratian elevates Flavius Theodosius at Sirmium to Augustus. Gives him authority over all the eastern provinces of the Roman Empire. I suspect those eastern provinces became Byzantium. 649, conquest of Cucha. Forces of Cucha surrender after a 40-day siege led by Tang Dynasty General Ashina Sheer, establishing Tang control over the northern Tarim Basin in Xinjiang. 1419, the Hundred Years' War. Rouen surrenders to Henry V of England, completing his reconquest of Normandy. 1511, the Italian Duchy of Mirandola surrenders to the Pope. Remember, at that time, the Pope had his own army, because he was working for God. 1520, Sten Sture the Younger, the regent of Sweden, is mortally wounded at the Battle of Bogesund and dies February 3rd. 1607, St. Augustine Church in Manila is officially completed. It's the oldest church still standing in the Philippines. 1639, Hämeenlinna, that's Swedish, in the Swedish is Tavastehus, was granted privileges after it separated from the Vanaja Parish as its own city in Tavastia. 1764, John Wilkes is expelled from the British House of Commons for seditious libel. I don't like what you said, so go home. You can't play anymore. 1764, Bode Willem Luxdorf records in his diary that a mail bomb, possibly the world's first, has severely injured the Danish Colonel Poulsen residing at the Borglum Abbey. 1788, the second group of ships of the first fleet arrive at Botany Bay. If you remember, the first fleet were the convicts that were sent to Australia because they'd been bad boys. 1795, the Batavian Republic is proclaimed in the Netherlands, replacing the Dutch Republic. 1817, an army of 5,423 soldiers led by generals Jose de San Martin crosses the Andes from Argentina to liberate Chile and then Peru. 1829, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe's Faust, the first part of the tragedy, gets its premier performance on this date. 1839, the British East India Company captures Aden. 1853, Giuseppe Verdi's opera Trovatore gets its premier performance in Rome on this date. 1861, American Civil War. Georgia joins South Carolina, Florida, Mississippi, and Alabama, declaring secession from the U.S. 1862, American Civil War. The Battle of Mill Springs. The Confederacy suffers its first significant defeat in the conflict at the Battle of Mill Springs. 1871, Franco-Prussian War. In the Siege of Paris, Prussia wins the Battle of St. Quentin. Meanwhile, the French attempt to break the siege in the Battle of Buzenval, and it will end unsuccessfully the following day. 1883, the first electric lighting system employed overhead wires built by Thomas Edison began service at Rochelle in New Jersey. 1899, Anglo-Egyptian Sudan is formed. 1901, Queen Victoria, Queen of the UK, stricken with paralysis. She dies 3 days later at the age of 81. 1915, George's Claude patents the neon discharge tube for use in advertising. Also in 1915, German strategic bombing during World War I. German Zeppelins bombed the towns of Great Yarmouth and King's Lynn in the UK. At least 20 people die. That's the first major aerial bombardment of a civilian target. 1917, Silvertown explosion. A blast at a munitions factory in London kills 73 and injures over 400. Resulting fire causes over £2 million worth of damage. 1920. U.S. Senate votes against joining the League of Nations. Also in 1920, the American Civil Liberties Union is formed. 1937. Howard Hughes sets a new air record by flying from L.A. to New York City in 7 hours, 28 minutes, 25 seconds. 1941, World War II. HMS Greyhound and other escorts a convoy. AS-12 sink the Italian submarine Nageli with all hands. 64 kilometers, that's 40 miles, northeast of Falconara. 1942, World War II. Japanese conquest of Burma begins. 1945, World War II. Soviet forces liberate the Lodz Ghetto, more than 200,000 inhabitants in 1940. Less than 900 survived the Nazi occupation. 1946. General Douglas MacArthur establishes International Military Tribunal for the Far East in Tokyo. He plans to try Japanese war criminals. 1953. Almost 72% of all TV sets in the U.S. are turned into I Love Lucy to watch Lucy gives birth to little Ricky. 1960, Japan and the U.S. signed the U.S.-Japan Mutual Security Treaty. 1960, Scandinavian Airlines System Flight 871 crashes near Ankara Esenboga Airport in Turkey. All 42 people on board are killed. 1969, student Jan Palach dies after setting himself on fire 3 days early in Prague's Wenceslas Square to protest about the invasion of Czechoslovakia by the Soviet Union in 1968. His funeral turns into another major protest. And what did he accomplish? Nothing. 1977, President Ford pardons Iva Tolgora de Aquino, also known as Tokyo Rose. 1978, the last Volkswagen Beetle made in Germany leaves the VW plant in Emden. Beetle production in Latin America continues in 2003. For those that are not familiar with Tokyo Rose, I just got an email. That was a name given by Allied troops in the South Pacific during World War II to all female English-speaking radio broadcasters of Japanese propaganda. The programs were broadcast in the South Pacific, North America, to demoralize Allied forces abroad and their families at home. They emphasized the troops' wartime difficulties and military losses. Several female broadcasters operated under different aliases in different cities throughout the empire, including Tokyo, Manila, and Shanghai. The name Tokyo Rose was never actually used by any of the Japanese broadcasters, but it appeared in U.S. newspapers in the context of these radio programs in 1943. Now, during the war, Tokyo Rose was not any one individual, but a group of largely unassociated women working with the same propagandist effort throughout the Japanese Empire. In the years after the war, the character Tokyo Rose, that the FBI now says was mythical, became an important symbol of Japanese villainy for the U.S. And in the cartoons, the movies, propaganda videos between 45 and 60, she was portrayed as sexualized, manipulative, and deadly to American interest in the South Pacific, particularly by revealing intelligence of American losses in a radio broadcast. Well, Tokyo Rose ceased to be just a symbol in September 45 when Iva Tolgora de Aquino, a Japanese-American disc jockey for a propagandist radio program, tried to come back to the U.S. She was accused of being the real Tokyo Rose, arrested, tried, and became the seventh person in U.S. history to be convicted of treason. 1956, she was paroled, but it was more than 20 years later she got an official presidential pardon for her part in the war effort. The You know, what no one seems to understand is those that were selected to do that didn't have a great deal of choice in the matter. Well, in 1981, Iran hostage crisis. U.S. and Iranian officials signed an agreement to release 52 American hostages after 14 months of captivity. 1983, Nazi war criminal Klaus Barbie is arrested in Bolivia. 1983, the Apple Lisa, the first commercial personal computer from Apple to have geographical user interface and a computer mouse, is announced. 1986, the first IBM PC computer virus is released into the wild. A boot sector virus dubbed C-Brain, created by the Farooq Alvi brothers in Lahore, Pakistan, reportedly to deter unauthorized copying of the software they'd written. And how far it's come. 1991, Gulf War. Iraq fires a second Scud missile into Israel. 15 injuries. 1993, Czech Republic and Slovakia join the UN. 1995, after being struck by lightning, the crew of Bristow helicopters, Flight 56C, are forced to ditch. All 18 folks on board are later rescued. 1996, the barge North Cape oil spill occurs as an engine fire forces the tugboat Scandia ashore on Moonstone Beach in South Kingston, Rhode Island. 1997, Yasser Arafat returns to Hebron after more than 30 years and joins celebrations over to hand over the last Israeli-controlled West Bank city. 1999, British Aerospace agrees to acquire the defense subsidiary of General Electric, forming BAE Systems in November 1999. Also, in 2007, Turkish-Armenian journalist Hayrat Dink is assassinated in front of his newspaper's Istanbul office by 17-year-old Turkish ultranationalist Ogun Samast. Also in 2007, a four-man team using only skis and kites completes a 1,093-mile trek to reach the Antarctic Pole of inaccessibility for the first time since 1965 and for the first time without using mechanical assistance. 2012, the Hong Kong-based file-sharing website Mega Upload is shut down by the FBI. And in 2014, a bomb attack on an army convoy in the city of Banu kills at least 26 Pakistani soldiers and injures 38 others. Well, we've got, let's see what else we've got on this particular day in history. In 973, Pope Benedictus VI is elected. In 1493, France cedes Roussillon and Cerdagne to Spain by the Treaty of Barcelona. In 1547, Henry Howard, Earl of Surrey, is executed in the Tower of London for treason. In 1668, King Louis XIV, the Sun King of France, and Emperor Leopold I signed a treaty dividing Spain. 1714, Richard Steele publishes Crisis, which defends Hanoveran success. 1746, Prince Charles Edward Stuart's troops occupy Stirling, Scotland. He was a pretender to the British throne. 1770, the Battle of Golden Hill that took place in Lower Manhattan was on this date. 1785 was the first manned balloon flight in Ireland. 1795, a democratic revolution in Amsterdam ends the oligarchy. 1808, Louis Napoleon signs the first Dutch aviation law. 1810, cold Friday, temperatures at Portsmouth, New Hampshire drop from 54 to minus 12 Fahrenheit in one day. And a lot of folks froze to death. The Peninsula War. After a 10-day siege at the Wellesley, the first Duke of Wellington and British Prime Minister orders British soldiers of the Light and Third Divisions to storm Ciudad Rodrigo. 1825, Ezra Daggett and his nephew Thomas Kensett patent food storage in tin cans. I'm not sure if that was good or bad. 1861, Mississippi troops take Fort Massachusetts and Ship Island during the Civil War. 1863, General Mirosławski is appointed dictator of Poland. 1865, the NV Suriname Bank is established. 1871, the first Negro Lodge of U.S. Masons is approved in New Jersey. 1885, the Battle of Abu Kru. It took place in the Sudan. The British Desert Column defeat the Mahdi's forces. The Mahdi was the anointed one who was going to throw the British out of the desert. In that battle, 121 British soldiers died and an unknown number of Mahdists. 1886, the Aurora Ski Club, the first in the U.S., founded in Minnesota. 1903, the first regular transatlantic radio broadcast between the U.S. and England took place on this date. 1903, the French newspaper La Auto announces a new 5-stage long-distance bicycle race to be known as the Tour de France. 1918, the Soviets, those firm believers in rule by the people, disallow a constitution assembly. 1918 was the first serious battle between the Red Guards and the White Guards. That was during the Finnish Civil War, don't you know? 1923, UK Chancellor of the Exchequer Stanley Baldwin, US Secretary of Treasury Andrew Mellon agreed to reschedule the repayment of Britain's $4.5 billion war debt to be paid over 62 years. 1927, the British government decides to send troops to China. 1935, Cooper's Incorporated sell the world's first men's underwear in Chicago. They called it the Jockey. That's where we got jockey shorts. 1938, General Motors begins mass production of diesel engines. 1940, three men who should have been in Congress because it'd make more sense than the ones we got, the Three Stooges, filmed You Nazi Spy. It was about the Nazis, or at least with the disclaimer, any resemblance between the characters in this picture and any persons living or dead is a miracle. 1941 saw the British offensive in Eritrea. Also saw British troops occupy Kasalaf in Sudan. 1942, the Japanese invaded Burma. 1942, also saw Titus Bransma arrested by the Germans. 1943, on this date, the first Warsaw Ghetto Uprisings began, led by Mordecai Anowitz. 1943, the Joint Chiefs of Staff decide on an invasion in Sicily. 1949, Cuba recognized Israel. 1950 was the maiden flight by Canada's Avro Canada CF-100 military plane. 1955, a program I like to watch called The Millionaire premiered on CBS. If you don't know the basis of that program, an unknown millionaire gave $1 million tax-free to various people on the condition they don't tell anybody where it came from. If they did, they had to return the money. It caused a lot of interesting situations. 1960, Eisenhower and the Premier Kishi signed the U.S.-Japanese Security Pact. This day in 1961 saw the first episode of the Dick Van Dyke Show being filmed. 1966, Indira Gandhi elected India's fourth prime minister. 1970, four bishops of the Roman Catholic Church in the Netherlands said there should be room in the church for both married priests as well as celibate priests. A priest got married and had children up until one of the popes decided that their family should be God. 1978, Judge William H. Webster appointed head of the FBI. 1979, John Mitchell, the former U.S. Attorney General, is released on parole. He was in federal prison. 1986, the Cerebral Palsy Telethon raised $17 million, which was considered an unbelievable amount of money. There's been a lot of talk about various people who were vanished and found dead. Let's talk about Dr. Douglas Cottrell, PhD, highly regarded Canadian medical intuitive who claims he, like his predecessor, Edgar Cayce, can access the Akashic Record Hall of Records. And he's given thousands of personal readings to people regarding their health problems. Access their
undiagnosed illnesses through a form of remote viewing. Now, he claims he was a former skeptic himself. As when he was a child, he was born with a serious illness. He sought help with the diagnosis through this journey, met others like him who could help heal people. He goes into a meditative state, looks into the past and the future, and it's said that he's able to make accurate predictions and see what happened in past events. Now, the unexplained mysterious death of Lisa Lamb, who went on to the who was seen on security footage in her hotel arguing with something nobody else could see, and then she was found dead in the water tank on the roof naked. He reports he saw the situation with Lisa Lamb in the lift, and he alleges she was hearing voices in her head, and this was not a psychotic breakdown. And it wasn't a demon, he said. They were being beamed into her head. They were calling her name and beckoning her, and she was looking for the source of the voices and couldn't understand why she couldn't see the people around her when the voices were so close. According to the good doctor, they were high-pitched and uncomfortable, causing her distress, disorientation, and fear. Now, she was supposedly obeying the voices going to where they were beckoning her so that she could find them, and they led her to the water tower, where she died. He said when she got to the roof, there were pains in her head as though somebody was pointing a laser beam at her. Self-destructive thoughts were being driven into her with sound waves being sent through this laser, he claims. Now, chillingly, he said he could see a dark figure on the roof, cloaked in dark, shiny clothing. A shadowed figure with its head covered by a balaclava. Thinks it's a man, but he also says it's possible it was a discarnate entity. Now, other people, in discussing Lisa Lamb's situation, point to her online activity. Was a tweet allegedly sent from her Twitter account really hers? There's a claim that from her Twitter account, before her stay in the hotel, she tweeted a post about a Canadian company getting funding from the U.S. to develop a quantum stealth type of camouflage for soldiers that makes them invisible. According to what she said, the gear bends light around the wearer or object to create the illusion of invisibility. In that respect, a soldier or anybody using it can render themselves invisible to everybody else. Are we talking about some type of cloaking technology? That would certainly explain a lot of mysterious disappearances. Now let's talk about anomalous beings. There was a young lady named Heather who discussed her frightening encounter. She was trekking with a friend and their horses in the Boreal Forest of northern Saskatchewan in Canada. And the day was, as the sun started to set, they looked for a good place to set up camp. They set up their camp, and when they got their tent up, she realized her hat was gone. She couldn't find it. Walking back along the trail they had followed, she found it about 100 yards away. She picked it up and said it really stank. They went to bed and saddled up the next morning. That night, they set up another camp, and at 3 a.m., she needed to go to the bathroom. And just before she went into the trees to take care of business, she encountered the same smell she had smelled with her hat. Now, she was a little nervous at this point because clearly whatever caused that aroma had followed them from the first camp. She was scared it could have been a cougar, so she grabbed a rifle. And she saw a saddle move slowly behind a tree about 50 feet away. Well, she made some noise, thinking she might make the creature move so she could figure out what it was. And she had hummed at it, and it echoed her hum perfectly. And, of course, that was disturbing because only a person could do something like that, not your run-of-the-mill average animal. Well, the smell came back so strong, she began to heave and went back to her tent. Her friends shouted out at that point and pointed the flashlight, and things started to run. And what they saw was unnerving in and of itself. Looked like a man with an animal's head. It quickly disappeared into the darkness. The thing was the height of a man, but its legs looked like they were broken and thin, and it was covered with hair. To both her and her friend, it looked distinctly human. Its body was human. The arms were human, but it had a goat-shaped face, and it had horns. Well, once the event was over, they tried to figure out what they'd seen. Her friend insisted it had to be supernatural. Now, there are a number of theories about the origin of this thing, if you will. Some claimed it was a goat man, and goat men were created by the Nephilim, the fallen angels who procreated with women, resultantly creating a hybrid race of strange creatures. But since its appearance was incredibly similar to that of the demonic entity Baphomet, once allegedly worshipped by the Knights Templars and now a significant figure in satanic worship, there are those that believe its creation could well be the work of dark alchemy and sorcery. And given that these creatures vanish without trace and no bodies have ever been found, maybe it's more likely they're indeed interdimensional entities that may have been summoned from hell itself. Demonic creatures that begin as mere shadows, weaker in strength until they feed off human energy, taking sustenance from them to gain strength and vitality, until they're able to fully develop into their hideous monster-like forms. Once fully equipped, they're said to move at lightning speed and can vanish in an instant, playing with human fear as though it's a game to them. Margaret Zimmer of the Florida MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, describes a report she received from a man in Pennsylvania. This man, along with his brother and son, were on a fishing trip at a reservoir. They made a fire so they'd have some light, as well as they had a large flashlight with them. And with the fire glowing behind them, they sat along the dock waiting for the fish to come. Well, the son was playing with the flashlight, flashing it behind him when caught between two trees about 30 feet away, he saw something absolutely unbelievable. Whatever it was approximately 8 feet tall, according to the adults, and its arms were almost as long as its body. And it was hunched over. They couldn't see its face, but it was definitely not a human being. Almost like an albino, it was white. When it moved, it walked as though its knees were on backward. Michael Black of the Black Files claims to have captured images of chameleon-like reptilian creatures in the Clapham Woods in Sussex, England. Now, this is an area rife with rumors of decades-long occult worship. The pictures, if they're genuine, clearly show reptilian-like entities blended with the trees on which they sit. Up to 6 feet in length, with arms and legs, and in the form of what looks like a praying mantis. According to descriptions, they have the ability to blend no matter where they are. They're masters of disguise, making them almost impossible to spot. Now, while taking the photos, they weren't seen, but afterwards, when the photos were examined, they were spotted. Black claims one of the pictures shows a black shape that doesn't fit with the surrounding greenery. He said this one's been caught before it had time to merge with its surroundings. He said you can't normally see them with the naked eye. And then he went on to make an astonishing claim. He said, I believe this is the reason they can abduct with ease. He believes there's a race of reptiles using our forest. Clapham Woods, like Windlesham Forest, has had quite a lot of UFO sightings over the years. The proverbial balls of light. And they're seen in groups coming and going from the woods, so you have to ask yourself, are they related? Now, reptiles are known to change their color to match their surroundings, and they'd be in your house, and you wouldn't be able to see them. Something to consider when you hear the sounds at night of things moving. Let's talk about things with wings. Caretaker, Mr. Marielli, lives in Oakland Creek, California, claimed he saw a very odd, terrifying sight one night in October 1975. He said at the time he didn't talk about it because his sure people think he's crazy if he did. He said that as he looked out, took out the garbage one evening, something above him caught his eye. He said it was like a fearsome gargoyle on the edge of the roof of the house, and it was staring down at him. He said it was broad, much bigger than a man. It was monstrous. He said, I was always afraid to tell anybody about it, but it was like looking at the devil himself. What he didn't know at the time, though, was he wasn't the only one to encounter such a monstrous thing. Winged, gargoyle-like monsters were seen in trees and on rooftops throughout that area. They all reported to have massive wings and seemed to glide silently without needing to flap their wings. There was an unknown magazine published from 1997 to early 2001 that interviewed a group of youth about their strange encounter in an Illinois park. One of the boys, named Ron Bogoski, told of how he and several of his friends came to face-to-face with the gargoyle. He said that night the night it took place was in 81. They were in the park. It was a late summer's night. They were sitting beside an old mausoleum inside the park when suddenly they noticed an incredible sight. Sitting on the top of that structure was a creature estimated to be possibly 10 feet in height, with dark leather-like skin covering it. Body was very muscular with thick arms, had enormous wings and horns on its head. And all four of the teenagers claimed they could smell the stench of decay coming from it, along with an overpowering smell of sulfur. They watched in awe and horror as the creature finally unfurled its wings and flew up into the night sky to disappear. Stan Gordon, another researcher, reports on the alleged sighting of a dragon-like creature seen flying in Pennsylvania in 2012. It was in a rural part of town. Man was out walking his dog at about midnight. Now, why you'd walk your dog at midnight, I don't know. I'd suggest a doggy door. Heard a whoosh and looked up in the night sky. He said flying over him was a large thing about 50 feet above that looked like a mythical creature. He said it looked like a dragon. It flew over a light nearby, and the man was able to get a better look at it. He described its body as being over 20 feet in length with a wingspan almost as wide. He said it didn't have scales, but it rather had a shiny, almost reflective skin. It was colored reddish-brown. He could see the arms were muscular and legs were thick, and both its mouth and its eyes appeared to be glowing. The noise that came from it, he said, was deep and throaty. On Explained Mysteries Forum, a lady in her 60s told the experience she had as a teenager. She said it was 1963. She was 15 and her younger sister and she lived in Colma, California. She said her mother used to send them berry picking in a wild area nearby. And that day as they started collecting the berries, she looked down the hill and saw a large dark object lying there on the ground. She was curious and climbed down to investigate. She said it was a huge dragon-like thing, and it was clearly dead. It was 8 feet long with huge wings and claws. She said it was stiff, had long, sharp teeth. It was frankly grotesque. She screamed, and her sister came running. And after they both got a good look, they both ran home screaming. Now, over the years, she said she had heard stories that creatures like this are mythical, but I know what I saw, and it was a real gargoyle. She and her sister both saw it. Now, recent gargoyles have been reported since 2010 in Puerto Rico, according to investigator Ronaldo Rios and the Guanaca police. Incredibly similar eyewitness reports describe demonic-looking entities of reptilian appearance at least 6 feet in length. They're reported to have leathery skin and weathery wings, red or yellow eyes full of intensity and menace. A few days before and directly after the 9/11 attacks in New York, witnesses and images show a huge winged entity flying from the Twin Towers. It seemed Mothman had reappeared at a scene of devastation as it had done before. There were reports of a Mothman-like creature at the Chernobyl nuclear disaster and also at Fukushima. Colin Andrews, a well-known researcher, posted a report citing English businessman David Haith, who had written to him to tell him what he had seen in 2011. This was just prior to the Fukushima disaster. He said, I was in Japan for business and staying with a friend who was teaching. After dinner, he said he needed to see a weather project the students had created near a power site. So he and his friend walked down toward the small weather project. They heard a sound like a bus's brakes and needed service, and then a scream that made the hairs on the back of their neck stand up. There was a young couple nearby who was staring at the power plant, and a figure was silhouetted there on top of one of the buildings. And to say that the creature was huge was an understatement. And as they watched, it unfurled a huge set of black wings and took off, circling several times, its attention fixed on the building below. The building that the creature had its attention fixed on actually had the nuclear reactors in it. Then it came toward where they were standing. It had two large eyes glowing blood red. It was looking straight at them, but it flew toward the town. Well, when they got home, the friend, who was shaking, bolted the door shut. He couldn't believe what they'd seen. Finally, he convinced himself it had just been an optical illusion until he saw the news and the fact that the nuclear reactors had melted down. Then we have the story of underground beings that demand human sacrifice. You know, Malta's been an island of great strategic importance for many, many years. It was a stronghold of the British Navy during World War II. Mythical creatures exist, and governments have long known about them, according to a number of researchers. And these creatures are fed humans. When ancient priests who worshipped Baal came to the island, they practiced the offering of humans to their god of the underworld. They believed he lived under the island. And what is true is that in 1902, laborers digging a well accidentally discovered a series of excavations that descended down to a multi-level catacomb. The hypogeum of Hal Safliente, as it became known, had long subterranean passages that were said to travel underground for miles. When it was first discovered, it was said that human skeletons numbering at least 7,000 were found inside. C. Lewis Jessop, a secretary at the British Embassy, reported an incident regarding the caves in the Borderland Science Journal. On a trip to explore them, very curious and much against the advice of the official guide with her, she ventured into the small, less accessible burial chambers in the lowest strata of the caves. As she climbed on her hands and knees with a candle to light the way, she went through a small entry point and emerged into a passage that led to an enormous cave where she stood on the edge of it looking at what looked like a bottomless pit. Opposite her at a slightly lower level, she noticed a ledge like the one she was standing on. It looked to her as though it led to a tunnel. And as she was watching, she said she claimed that one after the other, a group of very large creatures started appearing on the ledge. She said 20 persons of giant stature were walking along that ledge. She judged her height to be at least 20 feet. Long white hair fell like a cowl from the top of their heads, and their heads were oval and elongated. They walked slowly with long strides. Then they stopped, turned, and as if motivated by the same mind, they raised their heads. They beckoned to her to join them. Well, that scared her, so she fled in panic back through the gap and back to the guide. She said her panic didn't seem to shock him. It was almost as though he knew what she had seen. His look also held caution, as though warning her not to speak of what had happened. For many years, she didn't. Now, prior to this experience, she says, a group of school children went to the caves on a tour with their teachers. And they also had come into this burial chamber, and as the last child had entered, the walls behind them caved in, and the teacher and the children were never found. She wondered what happened with the giant humanoids. She didn't think the walls collapsing behind the teacher and the students was an accident. She knew what had happened to her and how lucky she'd been to escape. Now, the editor of the journal found her story a little hard to believe, especially because she couldn't provide evidence about the children disappearing. And he was inclined to dismiss the whole thing as a fantasy until he researched the archives. where he found mention of disappearances in the National Geographic magazine. He said the records are clear. The teachers and the school children descended and returned. Search parties and excavations later on found no trace of them. After a number of weeks, they were given up as dead. The article was written by an archaeologist by the name of William Griffin, also a mention of the skeletons found when the caves were first discovered as well, although the numbers are far higher than would have been realized by most. He said there were enough human bones to account for 30,000 people. He thought it was a restaurant, so to speak, for Atlantean descendants. Could underground races of carnivore species really dwell in the deep substrata below ground, coming up momentarily to snatch and feed off humans? Certainly there's evidence to support it. Interestingly, in some recent research, Dustin Naif says there are over 700 caves and tunnels and lava beds in National Park alone, and over 150 in the Marble Mountain area near Mount Shasta, with over 30 miles of tunnels that have been mapped so far. And in another part of the country, in the El Malpas National Park, underground disappearances are a common possibility. It was here that James Chapman's daughter suggested they go to El Malpas Badlands National Monument for a short walk to the Big Tubes attraction to celebrate his birthday. They left the car in the parking lot. A team of archaeologists saw them set out on the mile-long trail toward the Big Tubes attraction. This was June of 2002. The attraction comprised nearly 20 miles of tunnels and larval tubes, but they only intended to take a look. They weren't wearing hiking boots and didn't have any backpacks. This was supposed to be just a gentle stroll along the path to the monument. Shortly after that, they were reported missing. A rapid search and air rescue was instigated with sniffer dogs, helicopters, and over 200 searchers. Search party covered over 35 miles looking for him. The dogs combed the area thoroughly. No trace was ever found until 8 years later when their skeletal remains, with their tattered clothes, ID, and bank cards were discovered. Family and authorities simply couldn't understand what had happened to them on that innocuous one-mile walk, and they particularly couldn't understand how they had got to where they had been found. They were 4 miles away across the lava flows where their bones were scattered. What they had been found required extensive travel over rough and precarious lava troughs. Spokesman for the park said at the time, if they were on the surface, they'd have been found. Helicopters had flown repeatedly over the area where they were later found. Yet air searches, dogs, and people hadn't seen any trace of them. Now, crossing lava is not a walk in the park, so to speak. It's rough, and a mile can take an hour. The searchers were perplexed. Helicopters had repeatedly flown low over the lava. So how had the bodies not been found? If they weren't on the surface, where were they? Did they somehow get underground? Well, spokesman for the park said Spelunker searched the caves. We don't know how they got to where they were. So the question becomes, were they in the caves at some point? If they were, why would they go further away from safety when they got to the surface? Were they taken into the caves and the labyrinth where eyesight is handicapped by the murky darkness beneath? Was something human at play here or something far less easy to define? Well, since that point in time, 5 more people have disappeared in that same place. Interestingly, in Socorro County, SSAR reports, the organization also list other inexplicable disappearances in New Mexico wilderness areas, including in 2001, an individual walked away from camp during the night, presumed to be out of the area. Remains were found by hikers in 2012. In March 2012, a male runner from Wilderness Lodge Hot Springs didn't return from a run. After a 4-day search involving 16 teams and 5 aircraft, the body was finally found deceased. And the Search and Rescue Council in New Mexico relates the strange July 2009 case where they searched for an elk hunter in Pecos National Park. Over 12 teams with dogs searched for the man reported missing by his friends. His vehicle was at the camp with all his clothes and gear inside apart from his gun and hunting bow. Dogs tracked him along a trail and back to the vehicle, but nowhere else. Eventually, the search was ended without finding him. So what had managed to overpower an experienced hunter with a gun? What did these and the many other reported missing people disappear to before they were discovered? Usually dead or not found at all. Going back to the Malta Caves, the editor of the Borderland Science took things further in the 1900s by using the experience of testimonies from other both in regular positions in life and those involved in esoteric and auric study to become convinced in a theory that there may exist races in the interior of the earth of different densities dependent on their plane of vibration. Better to believe some of these underground races can shift between third and fourth dimensions so they sometimes are invisible to human sight and invisible at other times. According to the editor, these conclusions came from studying, among others, the works of Max Heindel's The Rosicrucian Conception, in which Heindel writes, "The first step in occultism is the study of the invisible worlds. Non-existent and incomprehensible because we lack the sight to perceive them. The mysterious force that causes phenomena remains invisible to us, but if with methods our higher senses are awakened or able to behold the worlds within." Man by the name of Credo Mutwa, internationally known Zulu shaman and healer. And he gave an interesting interview back in 1999. What he said, while unnerving, could possibly be true. He said over 1,000 children disappear in South Africa every month. Newspapers say it's organized child prostitution, but he doesn't think so. These children aren't street children. They're school children who stand out in class because they're good at the subjects. When shamans in Zaire talk of the lords who control the earth, they're the Chitalis. Oh, there are 24 other alien races that he claimed to know of. The field Chitalis' eyes glow red. They're tall and large heads. They walk gracefully. Some have horns. These are the warriors. The royals have no horns. They have a claw, which is very sharp and straight, which they use to punch into the human nose in order to drink human brains in their ritual. If they're sick, a young girl is kidnapped by the servants and taken to the underground. There the girl is bound and forced to lie next to the sick one for weeks, being fed and cared for, but kept tied up. Well, once the sick one is well, the girl is given a chance to escape. Well, it's not really a chance per se, because when the girl escapes, she's chased over long distances underground by flying creatures made out of metal and captured when she reaches the peak of fear and exhaustion. Then she's taken to an altar, sacrificed, and her blood is drunk. Now, the victim must not be sacrificed until she's very frightened, and that chasing is practiced by Zulu cannibals. And their descendants would tell you the flesh of the human being that was made to run to try and escape has been very frightened, tastes better than the flesh of a person who was simply killed. Here, and it's still going on, he said, 5 white girls disappeared. Each one was a highly talented child out of developing in spiritual ability or a leader in school subjects. It was a big story in the news, and the people came to him and persuaded him to try and find these children. Well, at that point, his phone started to ring and angry voices told him to stop helping. Those voices told him if he didn't stop trying to help, his own children would be murdered. And sure enough, his youngest was brutally stabbed, so to save the rest, he stopped. Well, after the disappearance of the children, the police arrested a reverend by the name of Reverend Van Royen and his girlfriend. Before he appeared in court, a strange thing happened. They were shot in their vehicles. After they were shot, their vehicle managed to come to a complete stop, something a moving truck wouldn't ever do. Now, clearly they had been murdered because he had a gunshot wound in his right temple. And yet all those that knew him knew that he was left-handed. So the question becomes, who murdered him? It should be pointed out that the newspapers at the time have a different version. They said the man's girlfriend lured the children away and the children were spotted in the man's company. And it was the reverend who sexually assaulted and murdered him. Their bodies, however, never been found to confirm that belief, though the police didn't doubt he was the suspect. However, the shaman believed that the actual true suspects were not even human. Which raises the question if the Shatali are in the U.S. because of the large number of underground bases. The number of missing children in the U.S. is astronomically high. That the slave trade doesn't have... That just doesn't answer the question. At the time of giving that interview, Credo said he was visited by three people, told him to stop talking or his wife would die. Is there really a blood-drinking reptilian race of beings who take pleasure in hunting humans? There have been many, many stories to that effect. And while many will say this, his account is pure fable, thousands around the world believe what he says, and he's highly respected for the nature of his for his nature and conservative work. A few years ago, another man came out with claims just as horrific. Investigative conspiracy researcher Dave Starbuck has been producing DVDs of highly controversial conspiracy-related topics for decades in the UK. 2006, interviewed a man by the name of Dean Warwick. Dean claimed he was a civil engineer who worked on bridge and tunnel projects in the U.S. for the U.S. government in the 60s. He said he was a whistleblower. He was also an alternative energy pioneer and claimed to be an insider within U.S. intelligence. He also said to be ex-British intelligence. Originally from New Zealand, he said his grandfather worked in the Justice Department and was a high-level Mason. He also said his grandfather was a world-renowned expert in Chinese detection. In Chinese, detection means the inspection of an object which can't be observed. In Warwick's case, he meant the detection of people picked out and stalked without them knowing it. In other words, he was referring to putting a tail on somebody. Well, Warwick said that when his grandfather was on his deathbed, he told him something as he was dying. He said that later in his own in life, he had learned something that he couldn't divulge to him. He was 15 at the time. Said it was something that practically destroyed him, and he was quite convinced he knows now what it was he was talking about. He was drafted into the New Zealand Army and topped every course in officer's training while preparing for Vietnam. He was taught how to bring down the Twin Towers using nothing but infrasound. They were made to study the experts, the Russians, the Americans, and the British in the late 50s. He said he was in the military. There were joint maneuvers in the late 50s by these superpowers, bringing down tower blocks using nothing but sound waves. Well, what he mentioned, what his grandfather made mention of, had to do with the killing of the children. They got a release from the U.S. Department of Statistics in which it said that every year, over 150,000 children disappear, never to be heard from again. A similar report said in Central and South America there'll be 350,000. That's 5%, 0.5% of the population in North America and 0.5% of Southern and Central America. The fact that it's exactly the same number can't be a coincidence. Well, this gets very, very interesting at this point. And we're going to talk more about it in future shows. But for right now, we are out of time. So until tomorrow at this time, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.